Hey, it's Scott Kirzner, Innovation Economy columnist for the Boston Globe. On May 30th, 2008, I had a chance to have an onstage conversation with Craigslist founder Craig Newmark as part of the annual TyCon East conference. We talked about his career pre the list, the site's unusual culture, and how it spread from San Francisco to 450 cities around the planet, his current role as customer service rep, how he answers emails so fast, and the company's legal imbroglio with eBay.
Maybe before we start, Craig, I thought we would take a survey and would you let us know by applause if you've ever bought something off of Craigslist? And how about people who've sold something on Craigslist? And you've met your current spouse or significant other on Craigslist? One of the kids is applauding over there. Parents, you weren't. Well, I think we have a lot of fun stuff to cover. The first thing I wanted to ask you, Craig, is as a kid in New Jersey, what did you think you were going to be when you grew up?
During my, let's say, relatively early years, very early years, I wanted to be a paleontologist and be the dinosaur thing. Then I wanted to go into physics, which lasted until my freshman year of college when I realized that I'd need a job someday, at which point I switched into computer sciences.
And so, as I was reading your resume, I think it said you spent about 17 years working for IBM, you worked for Charles Schwab for a while, you worked as sort of an independent contractor, software developer. How would you summarize that kind of pre-Craigslist phase of your life?
I spent many years in denial. I should have moved to Boston or New York much earlier and gotten technical again. Many of those years at IBM, I was, let's say, semi-technical, working in the field.
And where were you working, if not a big city? I know Boca Raton was one of your stops.
Well, I also spent 10 years in Detroit, which has more going for it than people know. But Detroit, rather, Pittsburgh was a step up. And then I moved to San Francisco.
So I lived in San Francisco for a little while, and in the Haight-Ashbury neighborhood of the city, you're sort of well-known for, I think this is true, or maybe this is just a nasty rumor, but you're well-known for always walking around with a pocket full of dog biscuits.
I live in a neighborhood which is part of what used to be Haight-Ashbury. I find that ironic. I was 13 or 14 during the Summer of Love. And didn't feel much of it. But I do carry around dog treats with me. And I know a lot of the dogs in the neighborhood. And a lot of the kids in the neighborhood. Well, there's a lot of little kids who like feeding the dog treats to the dogs, and that's a lot of fun.
So it's true. The rumor is true.
Yes.
Tell us about starting Craigslist. I mean, why did you start it initially?
To try to make it brief, 94, Charles Schwab, I evangelized and met there, saw a lot of people helping each other out, sometimes giving away expensive consulting time, and I figured I should give away a little back to the community. So in 95, I just started telling friends when I heard about arts and technology events. From there, I got a lot of suggestions, implemented a lot of them, and then started listening again, and just kept repeating that process. Now that process continues to this day under the leadership of my gigantic CEO, Jim Buckmaster.
You mean gigantic physically, right? Not by reputation or...
Well, he's 6'7 to my 5'7, and we look like a comedy team standing next to each other.
Well, when did Craigslist hit the point where you could quit your job at Charles Schwab or whatever else you were doing at the time? Like, when did it become a self-sustaining business?
Well, the pattern was a little different. What happened was that in 98, we tried running Craigslist on a volunteer basis. That proved out to be a really bad idea, partially, maybe in large part, because I didn't exert leadership at the time. That failed. People at the end of 97 cornered me and assisted me in getting out of denial. And so I made Craigslist into a real company at the beginning of 99. Didn't do a good job of it, frankly, but got it going. And to make a long story short,
I realize that as a manager, I suck. But Jim is a really good manager in Asheville, so he took over in 2000.
And when you turned into a company, let me just ask, I mean, was there risk at that point in terms of there not being enough revenue to support you and, you know, just in your income?
It looked like just based on what we could do, just based on charging for jobs in San Francisco, even way below market, we could make enough to pay the bills, maybe do a little better, because we've always run very lean. And at that point, I had written versions 1 and 2 of the code, and that was enough to get going. By the way, that was my last technical work. I want to remind people that I used to be smart, even though now people regard me as eye candy.
I want to ask one question about the design of Craigslist, because anyone who's been on the site and remembers going on like BBSs in the 1980s would say this is like BBS quality. I mean, are there ever graphics on the site, or it's just text?
Our part is just text. The deal is that what people seem to want is something simple and fast, and that gets to the point. Because a lot of media in different forms sometimes doesn't get to the point fast, and we're all busy trying to get our lives done through the day, and so we want to get it done. Fortunately, in way back then, I realized I had no design skills, but I, as an engineer, or someone who used to be an engineer, I know how to keep things simple, and that's the tradition Jim has maintained.
So you've mentioned Jim a couple of times, your gigantic CEO. Would you talk about how you hired him? I mean, the story he told me was like either you had posted an ad on Craigslist or he had posted his resume, or what was the story?
Yeah, the deal is, well, we don't think of ourselves as a real big deal, so honestly, I can't tell you exactly when I started. It was just early 95. In this case, we think Jim posted a resume and that I found it and had him come in to be a senior tech guy. That happened pretty fast. And then again in 2000, as I realized my massive limitations as a manager, he grew into that role.
Would you, and so your title now is what? What is it on your business card?
I'm customer service rep and founder. And just to be clear, because this caused confusion, I am not customer service manager or lead customer rep. I report to a guy named Clint, who reports to Jim. I haven't done any customer service now for about 30 minutes.
And do you manage? You must manage like a giant team of other customer service reps?
Not a manager.
How many employees total in this vast scheme?
25. We do need another programmer or two, that kind of thing. Because we're pretty technology-driven, and a lot of our stuff tends to be self-serve.
So 25 employees. Last time I checked, you were the 7th most popular website in the United States, 7th most visited?
Somewhere around there. We do get a fair amount of traffic, and that that tends to work out. Part of it, we have to give credit to our community. We trust the people who use the site. For the most part, they're pretty good. There are some bad people, some crazy people, but not many. So since we trust them, we give them the opportunity, the tools to get rid of the bad stuff. That's our flagging for removal mechanism.
So, I mean, I want to talk a little bit about Craigslist culture, because it's really an amazing thing. You know, people who haven't used Craigslist are like, you got to be crazy to put your couch on this website and then someone shows up at 9:30 at your door with, you know, $50 cash. And like, how could you possibly do that? And yet the culture is this really interesting, giving, maybe you would describe it a little bit. And then I want to talk about like how that culture has managed to replicate itself in all these other, like how do you describe the Craigslist culture?
Well, there's a number of ways of putting it. The key element is trust, which somehow, well, we earned over a period of years without quite getting it. As far as we could tell, and this is the best theory we have, we share some values with pretty much everyone. And I pretty much mean everyone, as far as I could tell, in the world. Namely, we feel that you should treat people like you want to be treated. You start there, and then there's the notion to phrase it in New Jersey, and you want to give people a break. People generally feel you want to live and let live. And you start with that, and then you practice it every day, and somehow that works. And we just keep doing that. When I was at IBM, as a systems engineer, I wasn't often allowed to provide the customer service I wanted to. And now and then, let's say talking to the phone company, I may not get the customer service I would hope for. Instead of complaining about it, I figure we're doing the best job we can, and we'll do better from there. That seems to work.
And how is it? I mean, I think people would understand that, like, it starts in San Francisco. People in San Francisco are, you know, a little bit loopy, you know, very communally oriented, you know, let's, you know, just, you know, laid back kind of personality. But, like, how did it work when Craigslist started popping up in, like, Boston and Austin and, you know, I think it's probably in Delhi now and Tokyo? And, I mean, how did that culture manage to replicate itself without you? I mean, you had no employees in those places.
As far as we can tell, the culture replicated itself by virtue of showing that we were serious about this shared value stuff I talk about. I try not to talk about it too much because I prefer to act on it rather than talking about it, but somehow this works. I'm trying to talk to a lot of people across the world now to better understand this because I have to find out to what extent I'm full of crap. But it seems to be genuine.
And when you said before you're a customer service rep, what's an example of, like, you know, you were back in the green room answering some emails. Like, what's an example of an issue that you were dealing with today as a customer service rep?
In New York, we have a problem with apartment brokers who indulge in unethical, sometimes criminal behavior, like bait and switch. We've got that largely under control, but there's still a narrow specialty of cases that I handle. On the other hand, I moderate our discussion board sometimes, because sometimes we have people who engage in overtly racist behavior, which isn't something I'm terribly fond of. And now, if the election's coming, we find that one of the candidates has explicitly told his people to start posting disinformation on websites, and that's increased the volume of that in our political discussion board. Really annoying, and I wish you wouldn't have told him that.
So, are New York realtors scared when they get an email from Craig telling them, you know, hey, stop advertising this apartment that doesn't exist?
It seems to be a mix of things, because many of them don't believe I exist. And I encourage them in that. But the deal is, their actions are often a mix of, well, yeah, they got caught. But in a way, they're also glad to be caught, but told that I'm dealing with the other brokers the same way. Because a lot of human behavior, well, people sometimes cheat because they feel that everyone else is cheating, so it's okay. And now I'm telling them it's over. A variant of that is I like going to New York a lot, and I'll wander around neighborhoods in Manhattan, and now and then I'll see an apartment brokerage that I know. I will drop in, and the stages of the visit are disbelief, panic, followed by photography.
And eventually they use those photographs probably in their ads, like Craig has endorsed, you know, Kirshner & Co. Realty.
Oh, I'm sure that they would hear from us.
Yeah. Well, tell us a little bit about. I mean, you sort of acknowledged earlier that you may not be the world's greatest manager, but would you talk about maybe a really big mistake that you and Jim have made in running the site and growing the company? I mean, it could be strategic mistake, operational.
Actually, Jim has not made any mistakes. That's been me. I have to be a little bit vague, but I have an impatient streak, and in a few cases I made hasty hiring decisions, and that's one reason I have no role whatsoever in hiring. That's come as a considerable relief. One technical mistake was, let's say, in some of the mailing list code that I had written, for a brief time I introduced a mailing loop so that a few people got 5,000 copies of the same email. And I literally mean around 5,000. Fortunately, everyone but me has forgotten that. But that's not a bad mistake. And sometimes there's communication errors. A few years ago at Oxford, I talked about some of my interest in new forms of media and journalism, and I accidentally gave the impression it was Craigslist who was interested, but that was just me thinking outside of Craigslist.
I definitely want to come to that a little bit later. But you know, we had Jim down at the Nantucket conference last year in front of an audience somewhat similar to this, a bunch of venture capitalists and entrepreneurs. And he was asked about 28 different times, 28 different versions of the question, why doesn't Craigslist try to make more money? You know, you could have Google ads on every page. You could charge people for more kinds of listings. You could charge more for listings. What's your answer? Just to preempt that question here, you know, the subtext of it seemed to be you guys are really bad capitalists, that you're leaving all this money on the table.
First, there's nothing noble or altruistic or pious about what we're doing. The deal is we've made some decisions about, again, what our values are. I make a joke about nerd values, because I really am a nerd. The whole plastic pocket protector thing is true. And the idea is once you make enough money and provide for your future, it's more satisfying to change the world a little bit. So what's the point in making more? Our community really isn't asking us to do that. We feel we do more good by letting people keep the $40 or $100 that they would spend otherwise. That feels right. And again, same reasoning for why we don't want to sell. Jim and I know some of these really rich guys. They're not happier than anyone we know. So what's the point?
So let's address the question. I mean, I think most newspaper people you meet, you've even gone to talk to newspaper industry conferences, I believe, and you know, most newspaper people kind of come with that supposition of Craigslist is one of the things that's killing newspapers. You guys are offering free classifieds. Newspapers for eons have loved to charge people for classifieds. So what is you must have a rebuttal.
Well, with the exception of classified ad managers, people in the press, the serious people, tend to like us a lot. They realize that the whole, for the most part, this is an urban myth. We do have a real effect on newspaper classified revenues, but niche sites, which are aggressive about going after newspaper customers, they're a much bigger problem. There are some specialty sites like in Jobs or Cars where they call up, again, classified customers. I know because we've been side affected by this because they've called our posters who know that they can email me, and I've actually called salesmen letting them know that this might not be okay. I did something like that this morning. So the deal is it's mostly mythology. Newspapers have bigger issues, like many of them are owned in chains by Wall Street, and Wall Street is insisting on huge profit margins, 10 to 30%. And, you know, most businesses, 10% would be great. So it's not that newspapers are losing money, it's that they can't get huge profit margins. I am really concerned about that because it means people like investigative reporters are being fired. And we need investigative reporters to ask tough questions. For example, one of the roles of investigative reporters is to ask difficult questions of politicians, sometimes getting us out of unfortunate foreign misadventures. That wasn't subtle, was it?
No, but I think people get the message here. Do you get a print newspaper at your house?
I get the Times. I understand Arthur is ecstatic about this. In fact, I have that in writing.
And probably being in San Francisco, you must get the Examiner, whether you want it or not, on your front doorstep. That's this free newspaper.
I live a little bit up a hill, and it's just too much.
One more journalism question. So you have, I think, gotten involved as a supporter, board member, financier in some kind of efforts to reinvigorate journalism online.
Okay. To try to make it brief, I'm involved in a number of efforts. NewAssignment.net does experiments in new ways to fund investigative journalism. I'm on the board of Consumers Union, which does consumer reports. because as a middle-aged nerd, refrigerator reviews have suddenly gotten exciting. Most importantly, I'm involved in a Sunlight Foundation, which is building online tools to look at, like, federal election data, where lobbyist money is going. They work with Center for Media and Democracy, whose specialty is exposing those front groups, like Swift voters, people who in the consumer arena or the political arena seek to publish disinformation to deceive people. Those people are doing dangerous work, but we'll see what happens over the next 6 months.
So I notice you're wearing an Obama pin. Have you done any active campaigning? Are you a big donor?
I'm not a big donor in any respect for anything, despite misconceptions. I have spoken up on behalf of the guy. I don't want to make this political. It's just that there's a lot of things in Washington that need fixing, and maybe it's time to make that happen. I'm especially appreciative of the kids, because people 18 to 30 are turning out in record numbers in this country, and I actually do have a lot of hope for things. It's oddly enough, I'm actually become more of an optimist as I've gotten older, because I see a lot of things and see the way people 18 to 30 are using the net. I do have one specific request for the kids, though. You're supposed to ask me what that is now.
I know. So what is that request?
Get off my lawn.
Was David Letterman the originator of that, "Hey, you kids, get off my lawn"? That's where I first heard it.
I don't know, but I can see him being passionate about that.
Yeah. I want to ask you, let's move into the no comment section of the evening. So in 2004, this website called eBay acquired 25% of Craigslist from a former employee that you had given some equity to. In 2005, eBay launches its own free classified site called Kijiji. In 2007, last year, it seems like two things were happening. eBay wanted to buy Craigslist, and Craigslist wanted to buy that 25% back from eBay. Was there anything you could have done to prevent eBay from acquiring that 25%, or if you could have, you would have?
I can only refer you to the Craigslist blog. That's blog.craigslist.org. You might start with a entry called Tainted Love. Jim's been writing that, and we're finding that he's an unexpectedly good writer. And he explains a great deal of what's going on there. My focus, again, is on customer service and abuse handling.
I thought it was a simple yes and no question. Could you have done anything to prevent that person from selling?
And you'll find that on my own blog, cnewmark.com. For the most part, I'm indulging my sense of humor or promoting good efforts of other people.
So,
I also Twitter.
But not right now.
I could.
He has an iPhone. He knows how to use it. And so this year, eBay actually filed a lawsuit against Craigslist, accusing you of, I guess, trying to dilute their stake in the company. Can I ask you if you have an imagined, desired resolution of all this tainted love?
I'd only have to refer you back to the blog.
Okay.
I do want to give you more, but it's in the blog.
All right. I'm glad you haven't said it. Usually the response I get to this question is my lawyers have advised me not to comment. Is that true? Can you afford lawyers?
We have pretty good lawyers. Perkins Coie. They like us because we give them many exciting adventures at the cutting edge of internet law. I should also give credit. I've been fans for many years of the Electronic Frontier Foundation. These are the folks who are the cutting edge people when it comes to all of our rights online. For example, they're one of the two firms in San Francisco trying to protect us against wireless wiretapping.
Do you have a favorite lawsuit against Craigslist?
There's not much of that around. I do have favorite lawsuits, but again, actually, it is the wireless wiretapping suit. The deal is that, I mean, remember, there are bad guys out there. Some of them try to abuse our site. They do learn that if they try that, well, we're really good at helping the cops with the simple forensics involved in tracking them down. I do want to add, though, that we do this in a way that shows respect for due process and the rights of the accused. I can see some of the folks here are old enough to remember that when in this country we had a constitution and rule of law. And we've even over the last 7 years, we've acted in accordance with that. And we are confident that rule of law will be reestablished in January. That wasn't subtle, was it?
No. I guess just a couple last quick questions, and I'd love to open up to the audience, which seems remarkably attentive for after dinner and after dessert. Your responsiveness on email is amazing. So last Monday, I emailed you about this session at 4:54 p.m., and you replied to it at 4:57 p.m. Is there a tip or a trick that you would share with people about, because you probably get a lot more email than many of the people in this room.
The deal is that, yeah, in fact, you emailed me in the afternoon, which is when my workload is lower, because like the East Coast workload is all much earlier. Remember, I'm in San Francisco. So the deal is that, if you want to get my attention, afternoons are better, Pacific time, and weekends are good, too. The trick is simply that I just am a little obsessive about things. I figure that if I let my inbox build up, I'm screwed. So I just do obsess about it. When I'm on a plane, Clint, again, who runs customer service, does back me up. But that's the only other time someone else will handle my email. And I literally just obsess about it. It does help that I use a very, very advanced email tool, very fast and actually fairly secure, called Pine. Now, for the more technical among you, you found that hilarious. This is actually a very old email tool, full screen, but character mode, not point and click. As it turns out, it's much faster than anything point and click, and I'm not likely to develop carpal tunnel. And again, since it's text mode, not executing JavaScript, it's probably not ever going to propagate viruses or worms.
Do you ever post listings on Craigslist?
I have. I sold my old car that way. Sometimes it feels a little awkward for me to post something for sale, you know, as Craig from Craigslist. And I've never figured out the ethical issues. And I've always, in fact, I just procrastinate thinking about that.
So have you posted anything recently? Like, is the car the most recent thing that you've...
I know I've posted much more recent things. Can't remember them. Because I don't care very much about what I've done. But maybe it's time for a new generation of electronics. Because after all, Jim has a bigger TV than I do.
And that's an important balance of power between you?
Actually, oddly enough, I may go smaller but higher resolution.